Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille.
And this is Roberta Maria Atti.
With you at the Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM.
Armand, the research that we've been doing on umami is fascinating, fun to do, far-reaching implications.
Before we do, umami.
Umami.
To people who haven't listened.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Right, is a fifth taste bud that they've discovered. It's a fifth taste. It's called savoriness. Umami. It is the ingredient that they have found in MSG. Actually, it's more complicated, but we're going to make it brief for now and come back to it. But it's kind of fascinating because it turns out that umami is a secret ingredient in Parmesan cheese, which is why you want Parmesan cheese on everything.
It's the common denominator between Italian food and Japanese food.
Right.
Because
there is no Italian-Japanese food, you know?
No, but it's a common denominator because Parmesan has umami, and so does miso soup.
Right. So we're going to talk more about that. It's really kind of fascinating. Umami, the fact that we do have a savory sense, a sense of what does it mean to pull everything together? Mm-hmm. And what is this? That's what this umami is about. It is the sense that tells you things are right. So here comes a question. Is love umami?
A form of umami.
You know, is it? Everything feels right. We're going to go into that a little later.
Actually, I think, Armand, that it might be a good idea if we started by discussing the senses, sensorial experience, sensorial perception, because umami is one of the senses, taste senses. But why don't we talk about the senses?
You know, it's an interesting thing, Roberta, because we don't talk about the senses.
Right.
I remember when I went to school, and practically all of you will remember this experience, one of the nice courses was Psychology 101. You dreamed that eventually you would get into the college point where you could take Psychology 101 and learn about psychology. Why did you want to learn about psychology? Because you wanted to understand the human mind. You wanted to understand why you got so outraged. You wanted to understand why your girlfriend or your boyfriend acted the way they did. You were going to become a master of psychology and be able to read people's minds. So the first thing you do is you take a course called Psychology 101 in college. And what do? They come out, and the first thing they teach you, the beginning of every psychology book, is about the senses. They teach you about the five senses. Therefore, the five senses are supposed to be what the basis of human functioning. Well, it's the last thing you wanted to learn, you know.
It's anticlimactic, isn't it?
Who wants to learn about the science?
Who cares?
I remember when I...
But they're fascinating, actually.
I wanted to study anthropology because I really wanted to study. I remember the first day I went to an anthropology class, the teacher said, "Today we're going to study the problems of the pottery in Polynesia." No, that's not. I want bones and relics, right?
Arrows and
what about that stuff?
Rituals, I know.
Actually, that was a Kon-Tiki debate. Okay, so back to it.
So the senses.
The senses. What are the senses?
Well, it started out, I would say, about 4,000 years ago with, nonetheless, Aristotle, who was the first one to say that we have five senses, and the five senses, in his view, were the ways in which we perceive the world around us and interpret it.
So the senses were, according to Aristotle, sight, hearing, touch, smell, and taste. Those were the five. This is his classification, Aristotle's classification. It's generally agreed that there are at least nine different senses and a minimum of two more observed in other organisms as well.
Well, I think that what is still being taught to kids today is that there are the five basic senses that subdivide the perceptual experience for human beings. Because all human beings, if they have a normal sensorial apparatus, have five distinct physiological perceptual pathways. But each one of the pathways actually is ramificated. What's the word, Armand? It's subdivided in a lot of other different aspects of the same thing. So let's just start by saying that the five senses, each one, sight, hearing, smell, etc., each one relates to a type of cell and a group of cells.
Well, wait, let me back that up a bit. In order for you to have a sense, I think what you're saying, Roberta, first you're saying three things. One thing is that each sense could be subdivided. Then we're saying there are nine different senses. Now we're saying this other thing, which I think is really important, that how does a sense work?
Mm-hmm. A sense is the ability to interpret energy that is moving around in the environment, and we pick up these waves, these movements, these changes in intensity, in radiation, in vibration, and that's what sensorial apparatus does. It picks up energy.
In order to do that, we have a specific cell type, and there's a cell, cells, I want you to think of cellular organisms, a group of cell for each sense.
Mm-hmm.
There's a group that is sensitive. For example, you're going to have the touch sensors is a group of cells that you have in your body. They could be all over or they could be in one spot, usually all over your body. And that'll sense touch. So you could have cells that are just meant for touch. They're not meant for anything else. And then you have cells that are meant for seeing. You know, you think only your eyes see, but your whole body sees in a way. We're going to talk about that with proprioception. We're going to talk about that with different kinds of perception that you have. Then we have hearing cells. Cells that are only meant for hearing. And we have, if you just think about it, there are different cells. The cells with the big hands, those are the touch cells. The cells with the big eyes, those are the cells that perceive
those
visual
things. Those are the visual cells, right?
And then there's the smeller cells. They all have big noses. Those are the cells that help you smell and identify smells. These are vitally, critically important for survival senses.
Right, because without the capacity to perceive what's going on around us, we would not be able to adapt to the changes in our environment, and so we wouldn't be able to survive. So
you know what always amazes me? It always amazes me that a fly could be on a leaf, and a frog with its long tongue can flick that fly. So quick.
That's all based on sensorial perception and reaction.
And the fly never knows what hit him.
Right.
That's it. Life is over.
Yep.
Right? Most flies only live one day. So, you know, it's like there's a fly and it's kind of over there on a leaf. And the next thing it knows,
yep,
gone. It's all about perception.
And it's all about acuity, is that the word? Acuity of the senses.
Sharpness, yes.
Sharpness means that you're so in tune with what's around you that you're able to read signs and signals of things that are happening that you can utilize to your advantage for your survival.
We're going to teach you things about the senses today that are going to be, some of them you'll know, but some of them are going to be really remarkable.
So let's just say, recapitulate that a sense is a system that consists of a type of cells that are able to respond, to perceive and to respond to a specific kind of energy in the environment. So the photocells pick up light. The auditory cells pick up sound. et cetera, et cetera.
So this goes into the field of psychology, cognitive psychology, cognitive science, neuroscience, and a whole other group of science.
Because
that is called neuroanatomists.
Because it's not just important to perceive a sign that something's happening. It's also important to interpret it, to know what it means. So it's not only that we perceive things, but then each sense has a spot, a particular location in the brain and nervous system where that message is being deciphered, interpreted, translated, and where it tells us what to do about it.
So, well, that's not new information.
And that
for
happens
most of you.
In a fraction of a second, so it's a quick response. We're not aware that all of this is happening. There's a lot happening when we perceive light, for instance. There's a lot that's happening, but it happens so fast that we're not aware that we're sensing it. We just see things.
There are a number of things that happen with sight, for example, which, you know, we have a belief of what sight is. What about that thing about that when you're born you see things upside down, Roberta Woods?
No, actually, that's true throughout life, that the structure of the eye is such that the image that we take in through the eyes reaches the brain through the optic nerve and through the retina. It reaches the brain upside down, and so the brain has to turn it right side up before it can interpret it. Isn't that amazing?
I don't believe it. No, I don't believe it. They told me that my whole life.
Right.
They've said, no, we all see upside down, but the brain corrects it. I think this is some big lie. I think it's like, we used to think.
You tell them, Armand.
Well, no, because, we used to think, somebody gave us a story about taste buds. Okay. They said you got buds on the front of your tongue, a map they made. And it turns out that whole map is a farce. There is no taste buds on the tip of your tongue that detect bitter and on the back of your tongue that detects sugar. Those all turned out to be false.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we were talking about yesterday.
Right.
So, but now this thing about upside down people, it is not true. You know why I know it's not true?
Why, Armand?
Because if you get banged on the head, you never wake up and say, oh, everybody's upside down. Or if you get a brain tumor,
right,
people don't go around and say, oh, he's got the upside-down disease. He's seeing everybody upside down. Or if you have some kind of a chemical disorder or even a cancer, you never wind up with a symptom of upside-down disease.
Right. I've never heard of that either.
It's not true. It's not true. We don't see upside down.
I think, Armand, I think that we're talking about refraction of images, and I think that it happens so quickly that we're not aware of it.
But if you broke my refractor.
I hear you.
You know, did you ever hear of a case of upside down
adosis? I never heard of anyone who was diagnosed with an upside down dosis kind of dysfunction.
So it's not true. It's just one of those myths.
But supposedly, we take in the images, and we all know that we need two eyes in order to perceive the depth of things. If you put a hand over either one of your eyes, you lose depth. You lose the ability to tell how far
things are. I'm not so sure about that either, Roberta, because I think I could. That's another one of those we're going to have to really figure out. Put your hand over your eye.
Well,
Roberta.
I did. I tested it.
Go ahead. Put your hand over your eye. No, go ahead.
More,
do it.
It becomes
now, I want
more
you to,
difficult.
Here's two pens. I want you to grab the yellow one. I'm going to put one in front of the other. I want you to grab the yellow one. Did you have trouble finding it?
No. No.
Okay, now I'm going to mix them up. I'm going to put them at different. Now, grab the red one.
Armand,
you know
I
exactly
think
where. This is another farce.
I
don't believe this about two eyes.
Okay, so let's get rid of that one too then.
It's difficult to step
off
curves.
True. It's not true that
not
you need both eyes. You can do just as well with one. That's what Armand says. I agree, Armand.
But people do have trouble with directions and depth perception, even if they have both eyes. See, if people have both eyes, sometimes they have trouble with depth perception.
And why is that?
I don't know.
Oh.
I don't know. But, it is a visual phenomena.
Mm-hmm.
I just am a little curious about these myth tales that were made up. I'm not sure.
You know,
upside down people.
I think,
I'm sure it's not right.
I think that there is a way to measure the physics of it, and it comes out with certain laws that then when you go and apply them to the, you know, the practical aspects of living, they don't make sense. But maybe the way that the light comes into the eye and it bounces off the lens, et cetera, would lead to an upside down image. Maybe that's what that means, Armand. But then it doesn't mean that, it doesn't mean that that's actually what's happening in
your
brain.
Well, the other reason I doubt it, Roberta, for all of these years, they've been telling us to test this depth perception. Put one hand over your eye.
Right.
Why don't you just close one eye?
Because most people can't do that.
Most people can't close an eye?
Right. Most people are not able to just shut one eye and not the other.
Is that true?
It's not as easy.
Oh, that's interesting. I know people who can't blink with one eye. They can't wink.
Right, right.
With one eye.
That's what I mean.
Wink with two.
That's
interesting about the human eyes. Well, anyway, there are fascinating things about vision. Light is one thing that we sense.
Right. Even sight, even vision could actually be subdivided into three or four different senses, because with one aspect of vision you see distances, space, etc. With another aspect of vision you see the colors of things. With another aspect of vision you see
brightness,
the shape, the form, etc. So, you know, it's not just one thing. It's really subdivided in so many different aspects.
Which is saying that there are cells that are sensitive to the shapes of things.
Exactly.
And there are cells that are sensitive to the brightness of things.
Exactly.
They're photocells, we could call them. And then there are cells that are sensitive to the color of things. And they don't both do the same job necessarily.
However, there must be, even in the sense of vision or hearing or any of them, a kind of umami, because the end result is that you see a flowing, harmonious image with colors as they should be. And so there must be something that
brings it all
through
together.
All of the information that you're gathering, it puts it all together and you have an umami image.
Maybe it's the same thing that turns people upside down.
Exactly.
Now we'll see. Okay, let's go on to another sense. I'm going to take this debate to Congress. Okay, hearing or audition is another sense. Now, this is kind of fascinating. Do you ever notice when you're young, you play music, and somebody older comes along and says, "What is that ugly stuff you're playing? Turn it down. It's just noise." Mm-hmm. And then you get older, and you look at the younger kids, and there suddenly you go over to them and you say, "What is that ugly thing you're playing? It's just noise." So what was noise to your grandparents is now, to you, it's noise because to your grandchildren,
yes.
So you're looking at it. So what happened to your ears?
Yeah,
not only that, so you don't, now you, music, but then older people also, the older you get, you can't stand loud noises of a certain kind, but you play your television at full volume, It's the loudest you can imagine. So it's like your hearing goes, but not the sharpness to sounds.
You know what I think happens, Armand? I think that as we get older, we develop what is known as selective hearing, selective seeing, selective sensorial experience, meaning that we maybe get tired of listening to certain things or seeing certain things or experiencing a certain aspect of reality. So we learn to shut it off. We don't perceive it anymore. But other things we still perceive. You know what I'm saying? That, like, selective hearing?
I wonder if it works that way, Roberta, because let's take a look at commercials on television.
Oh.
Right, commercials. Now, one of the things is known, if you're an advertiser, that you pick up the volume whenever you're playing a commercial.
Is that why they're so irritating?
That's why they're so loud. And you make it as noisy as possible. So you have an irritating commercial that's very loud is going to get to your brain. Luckily now there's TiVo. You know, there's a kind of selective taping so that you could avoid most commercials. And people are really stopping and not even paying attention to the commercials anymore. But the idea of listening, children will listen to commercials.
Well, they like, yeah, they like it.
They like the commercials. They can't tell getting that information, it's a, and they're getting, you know.
And there's a lot of sound
and color.
And it's
loud and stimulating and it's colorful. So it's like all advertising is now geared towards the kids.
Yes.
And not to the adults as much, except when they're advertising medicine. Now, what is it when they advertise medicine on television? They talk about your hearing sense. When they start warning you, okay, now this pill, which is good for your osteoporosis, is also known to cause blindness, and it makes your liver fall out, and it also, in some people, your hair kind of falls out, and then you lose your left arm. Mm-hmm. And it's been known to create cancer.
And you smell
bad,
too.
Of the duodenum, and other people have reported smelling very bad. And this is all on, as they're advertising a pill.
I know, and you see someone there, like, flowing with
right,
flowers.
Right, flowing and happy, and ask your doctor.
Dancing and everything, right.
Ask your doctor. We're in one of those spots in life where this silliness is going to continue.
Mm-hmm.
But audition, sound, has a lot of things going for it because there is a tympanic membrane. And in that tympanic membrane, you have a thinness. And things will hurt your ear. The more sensitive you are, meaning the more you could sense, the more sensory cells you have, the more unprotected you are, the more it's going to hurt. So you will see people, and you may be one of them, a fire engine passes by, you have to cover your ears.
Yeah.
A motorcycle scoots by, you have to cover your ears.
Or a loud voice nearby.
Sometimes loud voices. Do you know why they leave motorcycles as loud as they do? You know why there's not a control over the noise pollution for motorcycles?
Why?
Because drivers can't see them because they come up on your blind side.
Oh.
So the reason they did not regulate against motorcycle mufflers is so that you could hear the motorcycle coming.
I have never figured that one out.
Isn't it a terrible thing? You say to yourself, why don't they get rid of the noise?
Yes, exactly, yes.
But they don't want to get rid of the noise because it actually keeps accidents at a minimum compared to if you couldn't hear the thing.
Makes sense.
You know, it does make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Sound can be detected through vibrations conducted through the body, but you can actually hear sounds in different parts of the body.
Well, and now I would like to mention something about synesthesia, if I may, which is a fascinating, it's not a condition, really. It's not a disorder. It's not an illness. It's a fascinating variation on the theme of perception. It's a situation whereby a person has two senses, two sensorial pathways that overlap. So, for instance, people could be sitting in a symphony hall and listening to a symphony, and they are experiencing the music as colors. Or they could be sitting there and listening to a symphony, and they could experience it as a touching, as a kind of pressure on the skin. So this is actually something that some people experience in an intense way, in a big way. But I think that all of us, to some extent, have a little bit of overlap of some sense of, and it shows when we say things like, "Well, that music really touched me." Or I was, what's another example? I heard it coming, and you're talking about, you know, something that you perceived with a sense other than your ears. Or
especially with music, Roberta, you know, people can have orgasmic responses to music. You know, it could go inside your body. It's not just your ears that are working here.
Right.
There are many senses at work, and sometimes to some people, it's they just cross over their senses, as you're saying.
Yeah, but there are some people who actually have, you know, you put on a piece of music and they see colors. I mean, they see red and green and orange and yellow. They actually see the colors in front of their
eyes. And that's
eyes.
Known when people do psychedelics. That's exactly what happens with psychedelics.
Maybe that's what happens. Yeah, maybe that's actually that there's an opening of the pathways and there is a joining of two pathways that normally are not united. But some people are born like that.
Mm-hmm. Now let's go on to taste. Taste is a, well, no, we'll go back to taste. That's where the umami is going to hang out. How about another sense, which is called tactician?
Well, that's pressure on the skin. That's the sense of touch, basically.
So this whole thing is the sense of touch. Tactician is the sense of pressure perception. That's one of them. Pressure on your skin. If somebody touches your skin lightly, that's a touch. If somebody holds it firmly, that's another sense of touch.
That's pressure, yes.
So one perception we have of our bodies is pressure perception.
And so then now, there is thermoperception, which is the perception of heat or cold, of temperature, in other words. And so that is a different kind of perception that is included in the tactile sense, but it's not related to pressure.
You've got to have it or you burn your hand on the stove, you know what I mean?
Right.
You've got to be able to tell the difference in temperatures. Right. But it's fascinating about the difference in temperatures because, get this, cold metal is colder than cold wood.
Right, and that is because of the difference in conductivity, thermal conductivity of different materials, different things like metal and wood. So that has to do with whatever we are touching and the heat conductivity that it has.
Related to heat is using a fan. Did you ever wonder why when it's really warm out, or if you're having hot flashes, you pick up a card, a piece of paper or something, and you fan yourself? Well, isn't it silly? You're using a lot of energy to fan yourself, and that's certainly making you warmer because of the energy you're using, supposedly. But it's not true. You do feel cooler. And you're moving the very same air that you're in, so if you're in 90-degree weather and you fan yourself, you're still feeling 90-degree weather. Why would a fan work?
It works because it causes evaporation from the skin, and it cools the skin as the moisture evaporates as a result of this air movement. So that's why it feels like a colder air. It's not really, but because it causes evaporation, it lowers the perception of heat.
So you can cool off by evaporating.
Yes, you cool off.
You know, in fact, how often do people, when they're very, very warm, they blot themselves? Because they're sweating and they blot themselves and that makes them cooler.
Yes.
So fanning yourself, blotting yourself, air conditioners are built on removing the air, the condensation from the air, the moisture from the air. That's how an air conditioner is built. That's the idea of it.
And that's why in New York City in the summer it's so humid outside because of all the conditioners that are going at full speed.
And spilling all the humidity outside.
The humidity outside, yes. And that's when it gets really sticky. Another one is nociception. This is an interesting one. Noci is the Latin root for pain, for noxious, for toxic, for bad, destructive. So this is the perception of something that hurts us.
There are three types of pain receptors. They're the cutaneous ones in the skin, the somatic ones in the joints and bones, and there's the visceral ones. But we're going to have to come back to this because when we come back, we're going to talk to you about familial... Go ahead, do it.
Dysautonomia.
Familial dysautonomia. Do you think it's something that takes place with your mother and father? You're going to learn something about familial dysautonomia. That's surprising. So we're going to have to take a short break, and I'm going to play you some music today. Here's this idea of music. This comes back from the 80s. It's something I helped create. I'm going to play you a very short piece of music to which I strongly recommend you quiet yourself.
Yes.
I agree. It's a journey.
It's worth it.
It's a 3.5-minute journey, I promise you, friends. Well, I promise you, it's fascinating.
Turn up the volume, too.
Yeah, turn up your volume when we get down to our music after our commercial. Michael's going to do our now.
Hello, we are Kinky. You're listening to WBAI. Está escuchando WBAI. y quédate con nosotros. Keep with us,
New York City.
Hola, nosotros somos Kinky de México. You're listening to WBAI. Keep with us,
New York City.
Kinky.
Bring me back quite a bit, 1985. You like that, Everbrook?
I really do. It gives me a sense of
umami.
Inner peace, yes. Very calming effect.
We built it for the workshops. We created it for the workshops that we were doing at the time, which there would be a time when people would just kind of, you know, hang out and find out what's happening inside them. It's called Forbidden Overtures. I guess if you want to learn more about it, you can get in touch with me. I'll try to find it for you somehow. This is Armand DeBille with Roberta Maria Atti. If you've just tuned in hearing this wonderful music, we're part of the Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM, bringing you ideas, concepts to help you become a little happier. Now, we're talking about the five senses leading us somewhere, and one of the last one we talked about was the perception of pain. Very, very important perception of pain. If you don't know when you're feeling bad, You know, if you don't know when something hurts, you don't know when to pull it away.
That's a very serious condition, actually.
And there is a condition where people can't tell.
Yes, it is actually a genetic disorder called familial dysautonomia, because it's the autonomic nervous system that is impaired. It's a neurological condition that occurs among the Ashkenazi Jews, the European Jews, and it's a condition whereby, among other symptoms, from birth, the person is unable to feel any kind of pain, and they don't have tear ducts. These folks, they can't cry. They have no tears, and it's a condition that requires often institutionalization, because if you're not able to feel any pain, you can't move around safely, because everything could come at you and destroy you, and you wouldn't know it, you see? So it's actually a serious condition.
There's another condition called alexithymia, which is a neurological condition, also psychological condition, which has to do with the ability to feel anything. You know, you just numb yourself. How many people do you know?
You mean emotionally?
Emotionally and physically, because there are times you can't feel anything. There's a reason why that doctor is taking a pin and putting it down your body to see what you feel. You know, when he pricks your toes just to try to see where your nervous system is. It is important to be able to perceive pain. It is important to be able to perceive pleasure. And there are different conditions in which you lose that perception.
Right.
So alexithymia being really scary, because you have no sense, you know, is no sense of what's happening around you on a physical level. And then on an emotional level, alexithymia is when people have avoided emotions for so long, they go numb.
It becomes atrophied. I was thinking that really losing the capacity to sense pain and suffering is like losing any other sense or sensorial abilities, like the loss of vision or the loss of hearing. It's the same thing. All of these are functions that we have because they connect us to our environment, and we perceive what's going on through the senses, and we know how to react, how to behave, what to do about it. If we don't have the ability to sense, we're kind of lost, because we're disconnected from our environment.
Well, take me back to the primitive world. Didn't you once teach us, Roberta, that a lion on a hunt cuts off its ability to be compassionate, to feel compassion?
Sure, but that's done through a chemical alteration of the brain, which is a temporary condition, and it's done in order to effect a killing without any interference from the emotions or from the, you know, from the or from the nervous system. But what we're talking
is that what happens during wartime? You think soldiers go through that?
I think that,
you know,
yes,
soldiers,
and I also
sent
think,
into a place to kill.
I also think that governments have figured out a way to induce numbness or alexithymia, or, you know, psychopathy for that matter.
Because you're going to get to psychopathy.
Because eventually that's where you end up. You end up with someone who is not able to feel anything
guilt.
Human, really.
No, it's not anything. They can feel a lot of human things. They can feel passion. They can feel love. They can feel a lot of things. They just don't feel guilt. They don't feel shame.
I am talking about the serious, you know, I'm talking about people who are numb to all emotions. You see them in the movies, like what would be the Avenger, the Terminator, the...
They have emotions. They have emotions like love. They'll love certain things.
Terminator?
Yeah, sure. Sure, Terminator. In fact, Terminator was very caring. Well, not
no,
the Terminator.
I'm not talking about the real movie. I'm saying that there is a way to artificially cause neurological damage in a person, so that you impair a certain sensorial input, and then that individual is able to perform things that normal people are not able to perform, like
so
killing,
like a hitman.
Yeah,
right?
like killing without any kind of compassion or
anything. Did I ever tell you about the time a hitman came to me as a therapist?
No.
Oh, he was a known. I was young, and I was just starting in the field. And there I was, a therapist, and I was known because I was of Italian heritage. A man came to me who was known in the neighborhood. I mean,
like in The Sopranos.
Well, just like in it. Uh-huh. And he was a known hitman. This is a guy who comes to me, and he looks me up, and he has an appointment. And the minute I see his name on the intake papers, I say, oh, no, not him.
Mm-hmm.
Known hitman.
Right.
He walks in the door, and he says he can't sleep.
Uh-huh.
And now I know I'm in trouble because I'm going to hear all about murders and things, and that's going to mean that I am going to be keeping some secrets, which is not a comfortable place to be.
Mm-hmm.
So I said to him, oh, I don't help with those problems. For that, you need a medical doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And before I could go anywhere further, I sent him out to a psychiatrist who I know, who was somebody I happen to be angry at the time. So,
good idea.
But it was just one of those secrets I didn't want to learn.
I don't blame you.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, those are my early days. How about equilibrioception?
Sure.
That's important.
Yeah. That's the capacity to balance oneself even when you can't see, even when you're in the dark, even when you don't know where your body exactly is in space, but you still can find your balance. And you also know where your arms are, where your legs are, where your nose is. You know where your body is in space, even though you can't see it. And you can keep your balance.
Well, no, wait, that's a different thing. That's proprioception. Equilibrioception is the thing where you're just the balance. And a lot of you who have ever seen me for an interview, very often I'll have people do a spinning thing. I'll ask them to spin just to see how they handle dizziness, and then I'll show them a trick for getting undizzy, and I want to see if that will work, because very often I find psychological problems can be connected, if they're organic in origin, will be connected to one's ability to maintain their balance.
Right.
So balance is an important thing, and seeing somebody's balance is, now this is all related to cavities containing fluid in the inner ear.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some disagreement about this, whether it includes a sense of direction, but I think people who have a poor sense of direction are people who have a damage in this perception. That's what I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
And now comes proprioception, which is a very important sense.
It's the perception of the body. It's the body, is the awareness of body in space, isn't it? It's the awareness of where your body is, not just itself, but its different parts.
Where's your leg right now, my friends? Where's your right foot? Do you know where it is? Of course you know where it is.
And
how do you know where it is?
Proprioception.
You have a proprioceptive sense that tells you where your body is at any point in space, meaning in the space around you.
In fact, if you fall asleep and you are sleeping in such a way that one of your limbs does not receive enough circulation of blood, and so you lose sensation in that limb, it wakes you up. It wakes you up because it's not normal not to feel a part of your body.
And during that time, when you can't feel that part of your body, you literally lift it up and carry it along until you can get the sensation back.
Right.
Like if your leg's asleep, you pick it up and you take it with you.
Yes.
If my hand's asleep, you know, you pick up your hand and you bring it with you. Because you don't know where it is. It reminds me of a joke.
What joke, Armand?
Do we have a time for a joke? A joke. A joke. This is a joke that took place with the aviators during the First World War. Mm-hmm. First World War, the aviators had this kind of sense of nobility in the early part of the war. They had such respect for each other because airplanes were not, they didn't consider this brutal.
Mm-hmm.
So they would fight and they would have these flying aces, and there was a German Air Force, and there was the British Air Force, and these two were fighting each other during the First World War at the beginning. But they had, as I said, respect. If somebody parachuted out or if somebody went down, they would do what they can to protect the other aviator, even if it were the enemy, supposedly.
Right.
Well, during one case, a guy is a British pilot. This is a joke. It's a story I heard. British pilot is in a German hospital. And he's in a German hospital, and the Germans are trying to treat him well, and they say to him, sorry, you got to lose your leg. The accident was so bad, you were shot down. And he says, lose my leg? Okay, if you could cut off my leg as long as you bury it on English soil.
Mm.
The Germans agree. They take his leg after they remove it. They fly over English soil. They wave a white flag. They send down a note. He wants to be buried on English soil. The English people take
his leg
and bury it.
Mm-hmm.
A little while later, they go back to the soldier and they say, "Oh, your other leg has got to go." And he says, "Okay, if my leg's got to go, I'll, as long as you bury it on English soil."
Mm.
And the same thing happens. They bring it and they drop it and gets buried over there. Third week, they go back to him and they say, "Sorry, gangrene set in. We have to remove your arm."
Mm.
And he says, "All right, you can take my arm as long as you bury it on English soil." And they say, "This would he refuse to do."
Why?
And he says, "Why do you refuse to do it?" He says, "Because we think you're trying to escape."
Well, he was, wasn't he? What a strategy. He was getting away one piece at a time. I like it, Armand.
All right, so here we have proprioception, knowing where your body is at any
That's
given time.
That's a very good example, actually, of proprioception. That guy was figuring out a way that he could get away.
You know, there are other senses that supposedly are not human senses, but I've got my doubts about it. One
Do
is
you
the...
know, Armand, that fishes have both taste and smell is the same sense? I always wondered about that. Isn't that amazing? Their sense of smell and taste, well, of course.
Do they have a smell?
Well, it's the same as taste, because they
right.
take in water through their gills.
Right. There's certainly no air to smell in.
Right. So taste
so
and
shark,
smell
if
are
a shark
together.
Senses blood.
They don't. In a way, they smell it, but in a way, they taste it. Cause
so it's the
same
thing.
Yes, it's the same taste.
Taste
same
and
sense.
Smell are the same thing.
Mm-hmm. In water, actually. It's not just fish. It's all water organisms.
So it's like smaced.
What is that?
Smell and taste. Yeah.
Or tell.
I wonder if the hearing is the same as
well,
regular hearing. Because, you know, do they hear?
Actually,
they vibrate. You know, they
many
have.
Of them have this echolocation system, like dolphins, for instance, whereby they send out a sound and they have a sonar. They have a way to put it out and perceive it that involves sound, because it bounces off of water in a certain way and it communicates location.
So echolocation is the ability, bats have that, dolphins
have
it, it's like sonar.
And yodelers in the Alps.
Yodelers in the Alps, I wonder about that. You know, vipers, pit vipers and boa constrictors, they have organs that allow them to detect infrared light.
Sure.
So that they could sense
That's
the body heat of their
prey. Yep. And I've seen a documentary where they actually showed what the snake can see, and it's remarkable. They can see the heat of their prey. That's very interesting.
Because you could sense it. And it's not like
What about... Sorry.
Okay, magnetoreception.
Yeah, that's a nice one.
Magnetoreception or magnetoreception is fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
This is in the ability to detect fluctuations in magnetic fields,
mm-hmm.
and is most commonly observed in birds. Birds more than any other do it, but you know how they do it, which is fascinating, is they have bacteria which build miniature magnets inside them, and they use that to determine their orientation relative to Earth's magnetic field.
Mm-hmm.
So get this now. You have this magnetic sense based on a bacteria inside of you that has a magnet that it creates.
That's a symbiotic.
The human, I'm telling the human body. But, you know, I think that people are sensitive to the magnetic field of the Earth in a different kind of way. Because when you think about the stories of how the moon,
yes,
as it gets closer to the Earth or as it gets full, affects people. You know, lunacy,
sure,
or which comes from the word luna.
Right.
Is supposedly related to a full moon. How do you think a full moon affects women? Because they talk about full moon, you know.
For one thing, the menses are regulated by the moon. So, I mean, there's a hormonal levels are affected by the magnetic influence of the moon on the earth.
But Roberta, how does that happen? I mean, it is a little like the upside down people.
It's no.
How does the
really
moon affect a woman's period?
Well, I think it has to do with the difference in pressure in the atmosphere, difference in the magnetic field of the earth and therefore of everything on it. And so that affects the neurological system in the nervous system in such a way that it alters hormonal levels. And there you go. And I think it has to do with the fact that when people were more in need of being connected to nature for their own survival, it was important to have babies in the right season and at the right moment of day, at the right moment of the year. And so the menses are related to all the cycles of the moon and the water and the sea, and you know it's a cyclic movement because babies need to be born at the right time, and so it's all connected to shifts that are related to these cycles.
And so often enough I hear people saying, you know, and be careful, it's a full moon outside.
Well, it really
as
does
if you
affect
can expect people.
People
to get crazy. Now, maybe it's because, you know, if you're in the streets and it's the hot summer night, people act a little more strange because they could get a lot of light and you could see a lot of things because it's not so dark, you're not so private. But, you know, I've got to be careful. I'm not really sure, because my field is loaded with information about this. This is not another upside-down phenomenon.
Well, Armand,
do you think it happens? I mean, do you really believe it?
I really
it?
Do think,
okay.
yes. I
well,
really
then I
do.
Believe it.
I don't think it's the upside-down phenomenon. I think this is true. And I also think that as we go along, we discover more and more sensorial ability that we did not know we had. We discover it, meaning empirically. I mean, you know, 4,000 years ago, we only knew about 5 senses. Now we know about 9 senses or 10. So I think we are realizing that we have a lot more sensorial connection to our environment than we thought we did. And in fact, that's what umami is also saying to us. Umami was only discovered in 1908 and verified in the year 2000. It took us a long time to figure out about umami. From what I understand, umami, you see, is when you eat something that is able to bring everything together and transform it into something else, because umami foods are either enzyme rich or they stimulate enzymatic production in the body so that it facilitates your own enzymatic production and activity. So what are enzymes? They are catalysts. And umami is a catalytic sense. I know this could take a whole show in itself.
Well, it does, you know, but we're going to continue with this. I think it's very valuable today that we went over the 5 senses, and I think this would be a great gift if you wanted to get a copy of today's program. You would look on the Internet and see if you could find one that you could download and give to any student of psychology. That's a wonderful thing. So you could do that, or you could call our office, and we could find you a copy of it. It's 757-4488. But do go to either the WBAI website or the website thepositivemind.com. One more thing about senses that I wanted to say that really touched me. One of your things about your senses is that it protects you. They protect you. It's mainly there to protect you from danger. And one of the things I think about is if you don't have your senses working, if you're somebody who's like a young child who doesn't have senses, who tends to trust, then they have no sense. And that this gets the word in no sense. In no sense, which is innocence.
Mm-hmm.
Which is so easily damaged.
Mm,
yes. So we need our senses, my friends. This is Armand DeMille with Roberta Maria Atti.
Oh, by the way, I am going to be doing my own show tomorrow, Armand, 12 to 1.
12 to 1 here on WBAI.
On WBAI, yes.
Be sure to tune in, my friends.
Yep. Creative Health Solutions.
Creative Health Solutions.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be a surprise.
And it's going to be a surprise.
Right.
Thanks, Roberta.
By the way, that's my website, too, creativehealthsolutions.org.
Be back with you on Tuesday. We will, but Roberta will be back with you tomorrow at 12 o'clock.
Won't you be back tomorrow?
Oh, I'll be back tomorrow at 1. You'll be back at 12. I'll be back at 1.
Right.
That'll be amazing.
Yes.
Double dose.